everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shi, and as always, we've got John here with me today, covering our most exciting topic that our listeners have been waiting on for a while now. But before we jump into that, John, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, very well. Happy Friday, and nice to see you.
Likewise, mate, likewise. I know, you know, there are a lot of listeners being asked me, when is the updated figures going to come out for the gold to property ratio for a long time? So,
yes,
you know,
this upon... Yeah, this is our most watched kind of data series. People ask us about it. So, and we always get the most amount of views on this particular topic. So we'll see how we go.
Exactly, exactly. So I think it makes sense for us to, I think last time we've done it is about over 6 months ago now. So it makes sense to actually get an updated figures to see where we're going. And also most importantly, to look at the trends. I think the trends would tell us a lot of things in terms of how these capital cities are going. So John, I'll leave you in the driving seat then.
All right. Yeah, you're quite right about trends. So what we're gonna do is go through the gold to real estate ratios, and then we're gonna talk about each capital city as a ratio of Sydney. So we use sort of Sydney as an anchor. Yep. So it's property cycles, property trends, and we're gonna try to see through the noise that is always attracted to the property market and try to really see what's really happening. So I think we've got some fairly unique stuff here. All right, super quick though. I always like to, you know, if in doubt, zoom out. So we're going to look at Sydney property prices over decades now to just see what's happened. And a couple of super quick observations. So this is from 1979 to, I think, January or February of this year.
Very often.
Property goes up. What a novel idea. Our grandparents were right. We should certainly own this asset. So that's good. The other thing to notice, I guess, is that from 2008 onwards, a lot of volatility in the property market. My explanation for that would be that that we've had a lot more activism from our central banks. If, you know, whatever goes wrong in the economy, whatever goes wrong in society, there's always a solution of more liquidity, lower interest rates, pump priming, stimulus, and stimulus creates a lot of volatility. And what we see is like this V-shaped recovery of real estate doing what real estate does, but just in a far more volatile way. We see all those V-shaped recoveries as real estate recovers from whatever previously happened with all that stimulus. Third quick observation, we're pretty much back to the 2021 peaks. But when you process that and you think, what else in the economy price-wise is at the same price as it was in 2021? So everything is more expensive than it was in 2021, except for Sydney real estate or Sydney houses. And that tells you something. It tells us that real estate prices, not the rents, for sure not the rents, but Sydney real estate prices have, for the last couple of years, lagged inflation. But that's partly why real estate's going up at the moment. There's a lot of speculation that we are in a recession. It's been the most broadcasted recession for years and years and years. And I went back to the 1979 data set and I plotted all of the recessions over the last, is that 50 years, 40 years?
Yep.
45 years.
About 40.
And what we see is that real estate actually loves a recession. In most instances, real estate will continue doing what it does or go up a little bit more aggressively. Sometimes it will have a quick dip like it did in 2008. And that looks like a quick dip now, but it's obviously a couple of years there, actually. But then it goes into these lengthy bull markets, aggressive bull markets. And we had the 2020 COVID correction, which was a very brief correction, followed by a very aggressive increase in prices up to 2021. So when a recession happens, a lot of damage happens. There's a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. And that's bad. But the reason I put this on the slide up is because I wanted to just convey that from a real estate perspective, real estate does quite well out of recessions. And the reason for that is there's always a stimulus that follows a recession or a market crash, and that stimulus is really just inflation, just currency going into the system, and it gets dragged into the real estate market.
Yep.
All right. Now that we're thinking about inflation, I want to go to one of the main slides. Actually, before we get to that, We've touched on this, and I don't know if we've ever put this slide up together, David.
We did
Maybe
previously, yeah. I
we
forgot.
have, yeah. But to go very quickly, one of the things I kind of object to intellectually is the property clock. You know, we've got the clock, and it goes around, and then it's down and it's up. And I don't think that's what property does. I think the property does more something more like what's on the screen now. This was the brainchild of various economists, some US economists and some Australian economists who've developed it further. But what it says is that inflation actually, sorry, the property market actually runs through an 18.5-year cycle, starting with a mild increase in property prices, think 2012 to about 2017, which was a recovery, a 2-year correction, which is, let's say, 2017 to 2019, followed by the explosive phase. Now, the explosive phase is about another 6 or 7 years. It probably started in 2019. We know that the market started going up, and it probably ends in 2026. But this explosive phase, I think, and this is just a hypothesis, and not my hypothesis, but according to the 18-year cycle, we're in the explosive phase now. The reason we want to discuss this now is because most of the media speculation is, why is real estate going up consistently at the moment? Why is real estate still going up? And part of the reason, and we'll go through some other reasons in a moment, but part of the reason is that real estate is in its cycle, and it may feel expensive, but real estate is doing what real estate's done for a couple of hundred years. Now, if the cycle's right, peaks out in about 2026, it'll go sideways for 4 years to down, think 2008 to 2012, and then we'll start a new cycle. I used to chat to this guy whose name I won't mention, but some listeners will know him. I think he's a mortgage broker now. And he used to say, he was investing in Brisbane, and he would say something like, I'm just investing for the next cycle. Like, I don't care what happens for the next couple of years because I'm planting the seeds for the next cycle. And when I look at this, the next cycle is 2030 onwards, which is not that far away. But that's what a property cycle looks like, according to these hypotheses, which seems to be playing out. I mean, some have called it the E equals MC squared of property, which feels pretty good. Now, one thing I would say is the flaw in the potential flaw in this is not actually that the rhythm is wrong. It's that you've got to find the start date. So what year did it start? You could make a case that the previous peak was 2004. Anyway, David, I've done a lot of talking. I'm going to have a deep breath. Thoughts, comments? I know you're familiar with this.
Oh, look, I think, yeah, you've covered it pretty well, to be honest, John. And I know you always do a great job in explaining the 18-year cycle. And look, I mean, broadly speaking, just based on where we sit and up to about, say, 2026, because it's actually only about 2 years away at this point, we can see there's potentially a bit more explosive phase to go because, you know, we are from a credit perspective, I think it's only going to get easier. There might be some loosening coming up in terms of APRA on the assessment rate buffer. The interest rate certainly positioned to be coming down, whether that's later this year, whether that's next year. And we also got the stage three tax cut that's also coming, which means there'll be more net income goes into people's pockets. So in other words, all the trends are kind of pointing to the fact that the credit will be a lot more fluid, and there will be more available. It will be more available in the market for everyone to access. So in the next 2 years, that's for sure. So, you know, that could potentially push and continue to push up property prices as it sparks demand. So, you know, broadly speaking, yes, I think that's kind of on track. In terms of whether it will peak at 2026, we don't know. I guess only time will tell.
I presented this to one of the big four private banking divisions back in 2018, and it was this exact chart. And in 2018, I said, "Don't worry, guys." And remember, in 2018, the market was in the doldrums.
Yes.
It was going down quite dramatically, actually.
Correct.
I
Yes.
said, "Don't worry, this has only got about 9 more months to play out." They looked at me like I had two heads, but sure enough, in about, I think it was May, whatever, the day after the 2019 election, property resumed will enter the explosive phase. So it does make predictions a lot easier. That said, you buy a property when you need to, when you get married, and as my friend said, I'm buying for the next cycle anyway. But this is certainly something to bear in mind.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move into, I think, justifying in part, how do we get from 2024 to 2026? Why could property prices possibly move higher between now and then? So this is one of our listeners' favorite charts, I think. This is rather than pricing real estate in dollars, which the previous charts showed, this prices real estate in gold. So why gold? Because I don't want to price things in dollars. Dollars keep losing their value. 1979 dollar was worth a lot more than a 2024 dollar. And so it's like measuring my height with a tape measure that keeps getting longer every year. Like, unless the tape measure is going to stay the same size, unless a centimeter is always going to be a centimeter, you can never measure things over long periods of time. And that's what Australian dollars are, or US dollars. They are forever changing units of measurement, in which is to say they're not units of measurement. They're, well, units of exchange, but not units of measurement. The way I always like to think about it, look, we have to look at what's really happening. So let's say I'm a property owner in Zimbabwe. I own a house, and my house is going up at 15% per month, right? And I think I'm a genius. I think to myself, I'm getting richer and richer every month because my property is going up at 15% per month at least. And let's say I, instead of measuring my house in Zimbabwe dollars, I measure the property in US dollars, a universal anchor. Well, all of a sudden, I realize that the value of my property might be going up in Zimbabwe dollars, but it's crashing in real money, and the economy is crashing around me. So it really depends on what are we measuring the real estate market in. And if we're measuring it in the Australian dollars, we're going to fool ourselves into thinking it's going up all the time.
Yes.
Well, that's a long intro into the gold. But so gold is money. Gold is measured in ounces, so it can't change, like that tape measure analogy. And what we notice is when we measure it in a constant, real estate's just going from overvalue to undervalue to overvalue to undervalued, and it's sort of bouncing throughout a valuation channel. Of course, right? It's not, otherwise it would go to the moon. So real estate over time just is trapped in this channel, and that channel is about 620 ounces to like 390 ounces. So I've got those dotted red lines there. So for shorthand, it's going between 400 and 600 ounces, thereabouts. Property prices now, Sydney house prices now, are at about 444 ounces to buy a property, to buy a house, which is to say it's kind of closer to the 400 ounces than it is to the 600 ounces at the top of the range. Now, if we tie this into the 18-year cycle, my guess is that over the next couple of years, probably between now and 2026, that line moves up to the dotted line, moves up to about 600 ounces, and that's when the cycle is over. So we're probably moving higher from here, based in sort of real money. Now, the only kind of glitch here is that the gold price has been going up quite a lot over the last year or two, and particularly in the last couple of months, which has actually been pushing real estate prices down in real terms. So you can see sort of t ducking its nose down. But my point is that it's got a lot of room to run in historical terms, measured in gold, which is a monetary metal. Real estate's not particularly expensive now. You might say it's a bit cheap, which I hate saying because I know how that feels. David, you've seen this before, but what do you think?
I'm always amazed at this graph in terms of the real affordability or the real value of it. I'd say affordability is probably not the right word because obviously, affordability is a different scale. But in terms of from the relative perspective, is Sydney property overvalued? It's not based on this graph and using, like you said, using gold as the comparison model. And And the reason is that, you can't just print more gold easily as you do with currency. That's one of the reasons. And, John, I think you mentioned previously as well, it doesn't necessarily have to be gold. As long as it's something that's a lot more constant, you could peg it against silver. You can peg it to whatever that you like. As long as it's not something that's inflationary and you can continue to
Yes.
print more, then that can be used as a good something to a good pivot to compare against. We're just using gold because obviously it's one of the most popular commodity that is available. But look, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So just for our listeners, up to 400. So if the line is closer to $400, that means Sydney is undervalued, basically.
400 ounces, but
Yeah,
yes.
400 ounces. Apologies, 400 ounces. It's undervalued. And when it gets to the 600 ounces, that's when it starts to get overvalued, correct?
Correct, correct. That's right. That's at the
Good.
top of the cycle. Yeah, that's right. It could break below 400 ounces. It really could if gold does a moonshot, or if gold goes down. So it certainly could break outside the barriers, but that's how you know we're on the cheap side. So 2008, 2020, these big moments of property price undervaluation, that's about 390 ounces. 395 ounces when it bottoms out, and right now we're at 440 ounces. So to buy a median house in Australia, in Sydney, sorry. So yeah, and I think you actually pointed out, you used the exact correct vocabulary. Warren Buffett said that we know the price of everything but the value of nothing. This is distinguishing between price, which we know, and this is what is the value of property.
It's the actual value. I also want to ask John, because as you accurately pointed out, gold's been having a bit of a run lately. So that's no longer constant at the moment. And how would that impact this graph? Let's say, for example, if gold continues to go up, and I think it was about $2,000 a barrel or something. Has it
Yeah,
gone
it's
up to
over
about 2,000?
2,100 now. And in Aussie dollar terms, it's over
In Aussie dollars,
2,000.
and I think last time when we did it was probably sitting around a 1700 or 18, or I don't know, like
Yeah, something like that.
thereabouts. So it's gone up maybe a 20% in that. Now, does that with that factored in, does that mean it kind of dilutes out the growth here?
That's right.
So
The gold's not changing, but it's not the gold. The gold is still the constant. It's like being on a boat, and you're looking at the horizon, and you can see the land going up and down because you're on the boat. The land's not going up and down. The boat is. So the gold is remaining the constant. What has changed is the Australian dollar has got weaker. That's
You
really
do.
what's happening.
Thank you. Awesome.
So yeah. Let's move on. So the other next interesting thing we do is, okay, all right, so we've kind of said that we're in a cycle, we're probably in the last phase of a cycle, but a cycle that is going to take us higher. And we've looked at Sydney as sort of the biggest capital city in Australia as an anchor. And we said, okay, well, Sydney's actually not expensive priced in real money, even though it kind of feels like it's expensive priced in currency. Where do the other capital cities sit? Right. And I know there's a lot of curiosity on capital cities like Brisbane and Perth in particular at the moment for good reason. So let's get into where the other capital cities sit. So the most, I think the other most curious sort of capital city at the moment is Brisbane. And let's have a look at this together. I don't know what to make of each of these graphs, but this is the Sydney to Brisbane ratio. If Sydney's expensive, the line's going up. If Brisbane's expensive, the line is going down. So it's the Sydney to Brisbane ratio. And right now, I'll tell you what I think when I see it, and you can let me know what you think. I
Sure.
think Brisbane is actually more expensive than Sydney now, in terms of the historical ratio. However, clearly the momentum is with Brisbane. So I think at least for another year, Brisbane is going to be the smarter money. But I think the momentum's with Brisbane, but I still think Brisbane is currently a tiny bit more a bit more expensive than Sydney historically. You can see this line, it's certainly pointing down like it's going to shoot over
Yeah, the trend, isn't it?
Brisbane.
That's what I mean by the trend. I think the peak of when it was overvalued was back in around 2022. essentially. And then since then, the credit tightening started to happen. So all of a sudden, it started to pull back more towards Sydney. And now I think people just accepted the fact that, or at least from the fact that we're at the peak interest rate or close to the peak interest rate. So the expectation has changed. And yeah, people are starting to jump back in again in that sense. So yeah, it is interesting. Can you just remind us again what this dotted line means, John?
Yeah, the dotted line is the line of best fit. So what it's telling us is that from 1979 to the present, Sydney has generally speaking outperformed Brisbane, but that it all depends on what the starting date is. But from 1979 to 2024, Sydney has been a better bet than Brisbane. But that line will change.
Yes, that line will change depending on the trend. And looking at the peak and the troughs, the peak was around 225, by the looks of it. That's when Sydney is overvalued. And the trough right now is looking at probably around 125. We're sitting more towards, I guess, erring towards the 125 side. And the trend is clearly moving towards in that direction. So we are moving towards a Brisbane overvalued trend by the looks of it. In that instance. So yeah, it is interesting. And I feel like, yeah, Brisbane is certainly not getting any cheaper. And it's not looking like it will, the price is going to move down, come down at any point. Like you said, I do think we still have a bit of leg to run with Brisbane. How long that's going to be, who knows? But certainly, I think for any investors who's looking to get into that market, you need to be cautious now, because you could be started to overpay in that instance. So
I think I think it's still okay, but you're right, where it's getting dangerous. I think this time next year, it might be a bit riskier, but it's certainly the wind is in Brisbane sails.
The best time to get into the Brisbane market was around 2017, by the looks of it. That's when the peak was here, isn't it?
That's right.
So
That's right.
yeah, so
That's right.
that was around the best time. And then yeah, okay.
It's true, isn't it? And I think a lot of people were saying Brisbane is the right market to be in, and those people were right. Those people were right. I think you got in around that time as well.
I did. Yes, I did. By accident.
That's all right. That's how most of them
Only
go.
if I know what I know now or what I see in front of me today.
So, Sydney to Melbourne ratio. So these are the two big capitals, and again, this is back to 1979, which is a really good length of data. My take is that Melbourne is cheap, but not as cheap as it feels, because every day when you look at the, or every month when you look at the CoreLogic data, Melbourne seems to be going backwards. So I would have expected a slightly more pronounced Sydney overvaluation, but Melbourne's definitely, I think, the cheapest big city at the moment, and it keeps going the wrong way. So if you're position is sort of a value investor buying into weakness, but wanting to cover your downside, so you don't want to be overly speculative. Melbourne's a very interesting proposition right now. So I'd say that it's a little bit undervalued, but not as undervalued as it probably feels at the moment, considering it's going back all the time. But yes, what do you think?
Been stagnant for a while now, I think, from memory. It slightly declines, if I could remember correctly, with the Melbourne CoreLogic figures, we're looking at, it certainly was a negative figure for a 12 months period. And the trend looks like it's basically staying flat at this point. So it's reached somehow a more of a balanced equilibrium at the moment. But yeah, I guess it's probably erring more towards Sydney. So I mean, still slightly erring more towards Sydney, overvalued. In other words, it's a good time to be getting into the Melbourne market, as you said. And as a matter of fact, I've got a client that's looking at upgrading. I've got a few clients looking at upgrading their own occupier in the Melbourne market because I think they can clearly see there's value right now. The market is not too hot, and certainly there's good chance to grab quality assets in Melbourne. The only downside there, from the investment perspective, is that yield is just terrible, unfortunately. So, it's traditionally been the case. Plus, the land tax, at the moment, that's like a special levy that's taken extra cash flow hit again. So, yeah, it's got a lot of headwinds against it at the moment. And I think that's one of the reasons why that line is being stagnant like this rather than started pushing more towards Melbourne overvalued side. So,
It's considered a bit of a riskier market than some of the other markets, which is a bit more investor friendly, but it's still Melbourne. I mean, it's still a great city, so.
In the long run, I think we'll definitely bounce back, but the question is just when, and also comes down to sentiment as well.
Interesting. All right, should we move on to the next one? I don't even know
Oh,
which
yeah.
one. Perth. All right. We got there. We got there. Everyone wants to hear about Perth. So we came from a period of overvaluation around 2021 in Sydney, and it's just been Perth off to the races ever since. So Perth is considered the place where all the hot money is going right now. It was kind of Brisbane a year ago. Now it's Perth, although a lot of money's still going to Brisbane. It's Perth right now, and you can see that line going sharply down towards Perth overvaluation. So my take on this is Perth is probably slightly cheaper than its long-term average. So there's still a bit of value there, but it's rapidly outperforming Sydney in this case, but most of the other capital cities. And I would say that you still got 2 years, 2 good years of above average capital growth in Perth. That line is moving very quickly down though. So,
It
but 2 years, I would say. Yeah, Perth is looking very hot right now.
It's yeah, it's very hot on the ground at the moment. There's nothing to buy, nothing to rent at the same time. But the trend is the interesting one. The best time to get into the Perth market is the 2022 peak around that period, right? So about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, when the investors in the hot market and hot money hasn't really rushed into that market then. Since then, it started to turn around very, very quickly. And now it's in the full acceleration mode right now, basically. So, and I do agree with you. I think there's still a few years of leg to run, whether that's two, whether that's three, I don't know. But it has been, I mean, Perth's gone through a prolonged downward cycle, right? Like it hasn't really, really done anything since the mining boom, the last mining boom. So it's been stagnant for at least 10 years, and now partly it's just playing catch up, and also, yeah, I think that's where investors are finding value at the moment. Because where else can you still get? Like if I look at the Brisbane purchase price, the Brisbane purchase price has certainly shocked up a lot already. Based on what's happening in the last 2 years, whereas Perth hasn't really done much at all. So Perth's just now starting to wake up to that. And you know, when investors do the numbers, you can still get properties as cheap as $500,000, not far from the capital cities and the actual Perth CBD in that case, and still get a fairly decent rental yield of around 5% or even more. Because you know, the interesting thing, John, is that sometimes the buyer purchases a property and then they will get rent will get appraised at, say, you know, 500K will appraise at $500 a week. By the time it settles, it's gone up to $550 a week. So that just goes to show how much the rental is moving at the same time as well. So, you know, to be able to get that balance and to be able to get that yield, I think that's why Perth is having such a strong driving force at the moment, because investors are coming in strong and fast into that market.
So I think it's still definitely wind in its sails. Maybe not so cheap anymore, but it's still cheaper than other markets.
That's right. That's right. From a dollar value perspective, in that sense, right? But yeah, it's certainly moving towards the overvalued side of things. So I think, you know, if you're looking into getting this market in 2025 and onwards, that's where you need to start to tread with a bit of caution, because we may as well at that point in time. I think when you update the graph, we may have more moving towards the overvalued section rather than the undervalued section. So we'll
But
see.
whereas I see Brisbane as like 1 year left to run, I still see Perth as probably two years left to run. I feel like it's still high enough in the Sydney overvalued section. So I still think it's quite a long way to run.
Okay.
But just be conscious of this, listeners, and
Yes.
don't get in too late. All right. Adelaide, all right. We'll touch on Adelaide. Adelaide's been super hot, but interestingly, because it's quite a flat line of best fit, it's actually one of the most correlated markets to Sydney and Melbourne to a lesser extent. It's actually quite correlated to Sydney. And in fact, it's outperformed Sydney on average since 1993, which is why the line is pointing down a little bit. But not much to say. I think it's starting to really underperform, slowly underperform Sydney, but it's still moving higher. The one thing about Adelaide, and I don't know much about this market, but the rental vacancy rates are still very, very tight.
Correct,
The
yes.
real shortage there. So whether it under or overperforms Sydney, and it looks like it's still going to, actually, it looks like it's still outperforming Sydney.
Still strong at the
There's a bit
moment.
of trend momentum. Yeah, that'll probably carry on for another year or so, but it's definitely not cheap anymore as it was back in like 2000 and 2019. It's quite cheap.
19, yeah. Adelaide's the interesting market because it's I think it's always been the slow and steady market,
Yeah.
essentially, right? So when other cities like Sydney and Melbourne are doing their big ups and downs and ups and downs, Adelaide's constantly doing single digit figures
Yeah.
in the background. And again, a bit like Perth, it's doing a bit of catch up in the last few years, in that sense. And because it's still, you know, in terms of the rental yield, in terms of the purchase price you can get around those areas, in comparison to the big capital cities like Sydney and Melbourne, it's still relatively affordable
Yeah.
in that. So it's getting a lot of investor money in the last couple of years. Hence the reason why it's now kind of moving more into the Adelaide overvalued side of things. But it's also now got into more of an equilibrium, I think. You know, it's gone up, but it's how much more steam to go? We don't know. Yeah, again, tread with caution. It feels a bit like Brisbane when I look at the numbers. You know, the value, the purchase price already gone up quite a bit, so the rental yield is no longer there, or it doesn't stack up as good as how it would be or how it used to be. So yeah, just need to be careful in terms of getting into that. Although in the long run, like you said, it's done fairly well. It's a slow and steady market. If you want some properties that just basically performs and hums along in the background quietly, that might still be a nice market to be in. So.
I mean, I think that the quick money's been made. It's slightly overvalued now,
Yes, correct.
and in buy there by all means, but you'll probably just get like average sort of long-term returns now. There's no kind of catch up or give back, besides maybe some slight overvaluation there. Okay. Canberra, we don't talk enough about Canberra, but what is there to say? I think right where we are right now is long-term average, maybe slightly overvalued, but not materially overvalued. It looks like it's in equilibrium, and
But you would have made more money, right? Because that line of best fit at the moment is clearly leaning towards Canberra. So in other words, if you put money since 1990 into Canberra, you would have made a better return
than
as at
Sydney.
today. As at
Sydney.
today, now that could change again in another 2 years, 2 years time. But yeah, I think there's been a lot of hot money went into Canberra in the last couple of years. So you know, property prices have shot up sharply, especially around the 2022 period. See, there was that little spike, V-shaped spike, basically. Yeah, and then it started coming back down. So yeah, Canberra's been pretty subdued since then, from my understanding. And it was, I think, one of the markets that's kind of along with Hobart that's been pretty much going negative or going backwards since then. And it's just like a pendulum swinging. It's now swinging back more of an equilibrium right now. So.
No, it's a tough market to compare to the other markets because it's sort of crown land, it's leasehold and not freehold, so it's not directly comparable to some of the other capital cities. But a price is a price and a ratio is a ratio, and you can and it was always like that, so it's very good to see. But certainly the last over the last sort of 35 years, the wind has been in Canberra sales and it's performed very, very well. Also, very good rental market, generally
Yes.
speaking. So it's quite good from that perspective.
Rental yield is decent. I'm also hearing it's starting to run out of land as well to a degree. Started looking into buying some New South Wales land soon, potentially, just because ACT is expanding and yeah, there's so many populations coming in. So yeah, let's watch the space and see how that market goes.
Right, I'm trying to think. Hobart, and then Darwin. All right. Hobart was. I know that Propertyology, the buyer's agency, they really picked Hobart, bang on, right? I think they got the exact bottom of that market when it was up, and that Sydney overvalued, and I don't know if they're still interested in it, but they certainly picked Hobart when at the right time. And this chart does lend itself to that sort of analysis. So Hobart looks overvalued now, and actually, you see Hobart's giving back a lot of the upside now. But it's and you can see that Sydney's been outperforming it for the last sort of year or two, as it sort of gives back that overvaluation. But and so it still looks like Hobart's overvalued, and it's probably got a little bit to give back, maybe another year or two. But approaching a balanced market, but still overvalued, I'd say.
It's interesting to see if you see the graph is generally in line with what's happening between about 2002 to about 2015. So that's kind of like a little bit of a bowl shape since then. And then now the new bowl shape starts forming around 2017 onwards
Yeah.
now. Yeah, so yeah, I think it's a much bigger pendulum swing
Yeah.
in this context of things, and a much faster swing back as well. So yeah, it's still got a few more years of subdued activity is the way I
Yeah.
look at it.
Yeah.
Unless there's obviously some stimulus or something else that's driving that. But yeah, Hobart's always been a bit of a subdued market. The last tranche I think was mostly investor driven, to be honest, and that biggest jump that went on from about 2017 to about 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Okay.
anyway, I mean, yeah, well, I reckon I don't think anyone will be looking at getting back into the Hobart market anytime soon. It's more just a watch and observe market.
I mean, look at that line of best fits of since 1996. Which I remember the 90s, but it's way outperformed Sydney. I mean, that's quite a steep line from 250% down to about 180% of the value. So I think Hobart probably has maybe a decade to run that off, that it's way outperformed its peers for quite a few decades now. So maybe Hobart's cooked, but I don't know a lot about Hobart. So. All right. And finally, Darwin. Now, well, you can do this one.
Well, both of us don't have much knowledge,
Yeah, I mean,
to
it's
be
almost
honest.
obvious,
I think
actually.
it's a yeah, it's even smaller market in Townsville. I've got a lot of clients looking at
Is that
farming
right?
Queensland at the moment. But yeah, apparently the population, the size of the economy, what's available is even less than far north Queensland's Townsville. So as such, instead of putting money into Darwin, a lot of my clients are looking at putting money into the Townsville or the surrounding areas instead in the far north Queensland, as it's got better population and better fundamentals in general. But yes, look, just talking from the graph's perspective, this is certainly it's definitely one of those areas that Darwin is very undervalued right now. So from a valuation perspective, it makes sense, although I haven't seen any of my clients purchasing in Darwin at all, like I said before. So we don't really know that market that well, in honesty. But having said that, if anyone's keen to explore, it seems to be a good time to be looking at Darwin, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. It actually looks like it's at peak cheap. Yeah, which is hard to
Definitely a
say. And
technology now, John.
it's turning. So I think we'll be seeing. I actually picked at the beginning of the year Darwin would be the best performing market for 2024. I think I was early. It'll probably be 2025. But I mean, to the extent that you want to speculate at all, Darwin is probably going to outperform the other markets. But it's so obviously cheap based on this. Whereas sometimes we're looking at, is it above the line, below the line? This is definitely obvious. Cheap market.
But would you be putting money into Darwin yourself, though, John?
See, I
Just
wear
because
Sydney
it's.
underpants, which is to say, I kind of would only ever invest in Sydney myself. But even if it's not the right market
That's your standard.
at
That's
any
your
one point
standard.
in time, yeah, it's just I'm just extremely local. But I objectively, you could probably make more money there right now.
True. Okay. So this is number one in terms of the most undervalued. Who's our number two, John? Just to recap.
Well, so I was scribbling some stuff down there as well, and I don't want to leave a capital city out, but Let's go through our undervalued and overvalued. Maybe
Sure.
I'll stop sharing and we can
Okay.
do it from memory. So I had undervalued Darwin, Melbourne, and Perth.
Melbourne and Perth, yep.
Was Perth undervalued? I think it.
Perth was more moving towards it's got a very strong trend. I'd say it's balanced at the moment. A bit like
Yeah.
Brisbane, yeah. They're kind of more towards a balanced
Yeah.
trend at the moment, yeah.
Okay. De definitely, definitely like in its trend though, in its cycle, going to move higher.
Correct.
Do you mind if I leave Perth in my undervalued column,
Fine.
even though it
Yeah.
might be balanced? And then overvalued, I've got Adelaide and Hobart. Oh,
Adelaide,
Canberra was
Hobart,
the other one.
Canberra a little bit, or Canberra will be more of the balanced.
Yeah. Which leaves Canberra and Brisbane as balanced. Is that which was Brisbane over or under?
Brisbane was kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Brisbane was in the middle, that's for sure. Yeah.
I
Perth, I
think
think, still had more run.
yeah, I think Brisbane might have been slightly overvalued, but certainly going to likely outperform Sydney. So I think it was going to just keep cracking on, but it was probably a tiny bit expensive. But there you go.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. There you go. Thanks, John. Thanks for sharing the insights. I think that
Pleasure.
hopefully that gives us gives a bit of value to our listeners who's looking at picking the markets right now. Such a difficult
Yeah.
thing to do. I think the numbers don't lie. And if you look at it, and again, I think it's the trend that you're looking at, right? So in 6 months' time, I reckon it will be very different again. Who knows? Brisbane might be in the overvalued territory, and Perth might also be in the overvalued territory. Who knows? Like at the trend, at the pace that it's going at the moment, it could well happen. So we'll keep an eye out. We'll do another one in 6 months' time, and we'll keep everyone informed.
Do a mid-year. I mean, if the Sydney to gold ratio is right, that we're at kind of that lower level, it means they're all a bit on the cheap side. God, I hate saying that out loud. Property in Sydney in Australia is not cheap, but kind of historically undervalued. Yeah.
Undervalued, I'd say. Yeah. With the affordability, I think that's why
Yeah.
you got to pick the right vocabulary.
Yeah. I
Otherwise, you're
mean,
going to get a lot of hate mail, by the way, John.
I know, I know. Look, maybe the one way to say, I acknowledge there's an everything bubble out there. There is an everything bubble. The a lot asset prices are so discombobulated. A lot of things are being mismanaged. But within an everything bubble, where does real estate sit?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the best way to
Yeah,
think
I
about
think that's the right way to pivot it. So. Awesome. All right. Thanks, John. Thanks again. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us again. Look, if you like, if you've got any questions, look, feel free to just comment below, or John's obviously got his emails and details as well. So hate mails are welcome in case of any.
Right.
We like to know what people love to see more, and certainly any feedback are welcome. Okay. So until next time, we'll see you guys again in another episode of Spark Your Fire, John and David.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.